There's No Waiting, episode number 320. Neil Brower interviews the Darlings, 2004, part 3. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at weaversdepartmentstore.com and check out some of the amazing Mayberry items they got there. They even have a new t-shirt. Well, it's fairly new. It's called Words of Wisdom t-shirt. Go check that out. It's got Andy and Opie on it. weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 320 is Neil Brower. Neil Brower, thank you very much, sir, for helping support this show and for bringing us these interviews. The last 2 weeks and this week and one more, we're getting to experience a 2004 interview done at Mayberry Days in Mount Airy, North Carolina, during Professor Brower's class. He does that every year at Mayberry Days. And it's just a treat to be able to give you these interviews and to be able to have you hear from the Darlings themselves. You got all the Darling boys. You got Mitch and Dean and Rodney and Doug. And, of course, you got Maggie Peterson as well, Charlene. It's just you won't get this very many places. And so I am so excited to be able to bring this to you. And I thank Neil for being our executive producer and helping to bring it to you as well. And I want to thank, which I have thanked at the end, I believe, but not at the beginning, Neil and Pat Coleman for providing the video. So if you watch the video version of the podcast, you're seeing video that was shot by Neil and Pat. And be sure to thank them at a Mayberry event in the future. Now, we had some fun last week leading on up into the Andy Griffith Show and the beginnings of the Darlings and how they got their jobs and things like that. Well, this week we're going to go right on into time that they had on the Andy Griffith Show and their memories of that. And so I want to encourage you, if you haven't listened to or seen, if you watch the video version, the last two episodes of the podcast, go back and check those out. You can pause. Yeah, you're back. Good to have you. You can pause the podcast and take some time and go back and listen to those or watch those, which is even better watching them. And then head right back over here and you'll be able to see or listen to the third part of our interview with Neil Brower, interviewing the Darlings, which is the Dillards, and Maggie Peterson. So, Neil, take it away.
Well, the public loved it, and the response from the fans was so great that Everett Greenbaum and Jim Fritzell wrote a second episode that not only featured the Darlings, but the writers began to wonder who would be some of their neighbors, and that was the origin for Ernest T. Bass. We're going to see a scene where there's no music now, but these four, with Jim Rapile, do a wonderful comic scene. This is from Mountain Wet.
Sleeping on their backs.
Suppose if we turn them over on their sides, it'd help.
It's worth a try.
Night.
Tell us about that scene. What do you remember about it?
Oh, the first time I saw a show where that had been cut out to put in commercials, I stood up in my own living room and said, "You can't do that." That snoring scene was so incredibly funny that, like, Don and Andy are both very professional people, and they crack each other up every now and then, but it was very brief, and they usually did it off stage or in some other, you know, off camera. But during that thing, we were all snoring and all doing our best to follow Denver Powell's directions. He'd said, "Pick out somebody you know that snores and has an unusual snore, and imitate it." And Denver gave us an example, and Douglas picked one, Rodney had one, Dean came up with one. Anybody can do that, you know, if you point them toward it that way. All I could do was remember people that I was in the Navy with who snored aboard ship, where the sound goes boing, 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 so you're hearing 19 snorts. Well, that whole thing was so funny that in the middle of it, Andy started sliding under his blanket and got on the floor, and then Don knew it was all right to laugh, and both of them were on the floor. Well, as if that weren't, you know, that was enough for me. Once I'd seen them laugh, I knew it was as funny as I thought it was. And I don't know how long that scene took to film.
Oh, they had to cut. They cut. The director, because the crew was laughing too. Everyone started laughing. It got out of control.
I remember the assistant director remember Ronnie, what was his name?
Ronnie Jacobs.
Ronnie, yeah. Said he got really tough with it. He says, "Hey, we're on the clock here. This is costing us money. I want everybody to shut up and let's do this scene."
Well, then, yeah, right. Then that really did.
And then so he said, "Okay, now roll the tape. Roll the tape, Ed." The guy said, "Speed." Stop. I'm pretty soon he breaks. He explodes with laughter and goes down on the floor, runs into the cameraman. And so I think at that point we did take a break for lunch.
Yeah, no, they broke us because it was out of hand.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful comedic scene. Now, the whole premise of the story is that Charlene has to get married a second time by a preacher to satisfy Ernest T. Bass. One thing I've always loved in this episode is when Charlene walks out for the first time in her wedding dress. Let's see that scene.
Just a second. Hold still, Mr. Darling.
Ever since I saw it hanging, I've been nervous about wearing one of these things. You look just like your ma.
You look nice, Charlene.
Beautiful, Charlene. Don't you look pretty, boys?
Boys ain't much of a compliment.
When I was writing the book, I asked Mitch, what was their reaction to seeing you in the wedding dress for the first time? And he said, well, that it was done so many times under the lights that when they saw you walk out, when it's filmed, it was no first-time revelation. But he said, if you looked at the expression in Denver Powell's face portraying your father, you could see the love and the beauty. What do you remember? Anything, any comments, Maggie? I know she laughed about the dress. Anything about that?
Well, I look so silly. Oh, dear. I don't know. It brings back beautiful memories. I can't tell you everything.
I think that beautiful memories not only for you, but for us. Again, the Dillards, the Darling family, were so popular that another script was written for the fourth season. Now, this script did not include Maggie. Maggie, how did you feel about not being included in Briscoe Declares for Aunt Vic?
Oh, I thought it was great because it was such a funny script. There really wasn't a place for Charlene in that script.
And that's exactly.
Terrific. Script. It was so funny.
It was a wonderful script, and let's see the meat scene.
Well,
Mr. Darling. How was it? Everything to your satisfaction?
Oh, that's a cleanest cooking woman as I ever did see.
Ain't me believes that cleanliness is next to godliness.
Neat and reverent. That's a combination hard to come by.
It is.
Where's my jug?
Come on, boys. Sit at the table.
Oh, come on, boys. Come right on over here and sit right down and let's go to eat some of this supper. You all just fill right in over there where you know all stay together. Come on up. Just sit down. Oh, ain't B, those potatoes are a picture no artist could paint.
Oh, flipperty jibbit.
She can't stand to be bragged on.
Fine quality. I like modesty in a human female being.
Yeah, oh, pass the bread to the boys.
Okay, Pa.
Okay, have some pickles.
Thank you.
I'll have a tomato here. Salt here.
Bread!
What happened?
Mr. Darling put in a request for additional bread, Aunt B.
Oh, didn't I yell loud enough?
Oh, you must be big eaters.
Oh, we're known as a family of hearty-eating men and beautiful, delicate women.
Yeah, help yourself to potatoes, boys. Good.
Taters!
How about when you want something, just tell me and I'll tell Aunt B.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Aunt B, we need more potatoes.
Here it does look good, don't it?
It does. See what we need when she comes in. I don't like for the boy to raise his voice at the table.
Oh, you gotta watch that. Hear that, boys? No yelling at the table. Take a while, but I'll learn them.
The instrumental that began that scene, we know it as dueling banjos. You called it mocking banjos.
No, dueling banjos.
Dueling banjos? Yeah. This was before Deliverance. This was part of your act?
Yes, it was. In fact, it was. Someone else heard us play it in New York and decided to record it in that movie, and they took our version and the name. They call it Dueling Banjos in the movie Deliverance.
Tell me a little bit about your impression of Denver Powell. What was he like as an actor to work with?
I just thought he was incredible. Everything, his little tricks of the trade, everything he did, the way he observed everything, and the sense of humor he had about acting and about the whole business. And he was just wonderful.
He was. He was wonderful. He was funny. He did things for our benefit because he knew that they would get a kick out of it. Remember the first day we were out on location, it was after lunch, we had a little bit of time. Denver caught our eye. He looked over to see if we were watching him. Then he went around and around and around. And then he went poof on the ground, just like an old dog. And of course, we all got it, you know.
There's one scene, I can't remember what episode, maybe you can help me with this. This where Doug and I come bursting in the sheriff's office with our pa. You were doing something, you and Andy, it was a piece of business, chasing him around the desk. And just
that
before
was
we
won't kill your aunt.
Yeah, and what happened is just before we burst in the door, Denver changed all the lines around. They said action, and he changed all the lines around. I can't tell you what he said, but when we came through that door, he meant to crack Doug and I up. So it was very difficult in that scene because he'd said something else other than his line when he walked in. But he would do things like that. One time he told me a story. He said it was his very first, I think, acting line he had. And he was, I think it was with John Wayne. Was that the movie? And he was supposed to run out and look down the river and say, "Look, fur smugglers." So he practiced his line. "Look, fur smugglers. Look, fur smugglers." And they said, "Action." And he ran out and said, "Look, smurfugglers."
We're going to see Denver singing. He serenades Aunt B. Let's see this scene.
Thank you.
thinking only of little you, always trying to keep from crying. I'm low and lonely over you, low and lonely at home, thinking only of little you, always trying to keep from crying. I'm low and lonely over you.
Mr. Darling, you'll wake up the whole town with this caterwauling.
Caterwauling, ma'am? I'll have you know that this courting chivalry is a lifelong custom of my people.
Well, to us, it's disturbing the peace. Good night.
Well, she's playing awful hard to get, boys. I'm going to have to think this thing out.
And so I knew the song already from listening to that there for several years. And so we thought that'd be a perfect song for him to sing to Aunt B.
And it was wonderful. Now, this episode ends on a comedic high with Aunt B's spoon. So let's see that scene.
In his turn, share and share alike. You go first, Briscoe, as head of the family. Take one and pass to the left. Oh, no, no, no. Put one on the plate and pass the bowl to the left.
We don't do it that way here.
We do now.
Well, a lot warmer today than it was yesterday, ain't it?
Warmer and more painful.
That's my crazy bone.
No elbows on the table.
Ain't fair.
What isn't?
You hitting first and explaining the rules late.
Napkins will go on the laps.
I spill on my shirt. I don't spill on my pants.
Well, nice people don't spill at all.
Tony.
Well, for happy marriage, each must give a little.
Pow! Pow! For a pretty woman that reads Rose poetry, use your pack of mean spoons.
Don't you raise your voice at the table.
I'll raise my voice, I'll raise hogs, I'll raise whatever I want to raise. This is my table.
That tears. That just tears. Come on, won't take me away.
What are you talking about?
Clap them handcuffs on me, I'm breach of promise.
You're not.
Yes, I am. This has gone just far enough. I can take some manners, and I can take some cleaning up, and I can take a bossy mouth. But I ain't about to be beat to death with no spoon.
I got to tell you something about the spoon. That first take they did, the first when she whacked him the first time, she was really whacking him. And he was starting to get spoon shy there. So they finally had to put a piece of white sponge on the bottom of that spoon because she was just beating him with that spoon. So you can't see it, but on the bottom of there is a little thick layer of sponge that they finally had to put on there because he was getting all bruised up from that. It's a wonderful scene. What was your impression of Frances Barbier?
Well, she was a great lady. I did a little thing on there that I thought would be funny. I was still on a mandolin trading back in that day. I had a bunch of these old different mandolins, and so every time I did we did a show, I'd take a different one. I thought that'd be funny to see who'd catch it. And so she asked me about every one of those. She was always interested every time I brought one in. Where did I get that one, and what kind was it, and how old was it, and everything about it.
I have a story about Frances. Can I tell it?
She also made good cookies and candies and stuff.
They brought those?
Yes, she did. When I first did the first show in Hollywood, I can tell a story because I told it in the Baptist church, and I've been back. When I was in Hollywood there for a while, I got lonely, so being an Ozark kid, I went out and bought a dog. And I bought one of these great big old Malamutes. You know what they are? They're like the wheel dog of a dog sled, the big one, bigger than the husky. And they're very territorial animals. And I took him down to the vet there in Hollywood, get him all checked out. And he weighed over 100 pounds. He's a big dog. And I was in the vet's office, and this was after the first show, and Frances Barbier came in with some little lap frou-frou dog. And she saw me from across the room, And I was just very proud she saw me and recognized me. And I think, oh, I'm a big star like that. Well, she wouldn't remember us. And she walked right up to me and started talking to me. She was standing there looking me right in the eye. And all of a sudden she went, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I followed her gaze down. And I looked down. And my dog was marking his territory on her leg. I was mortified. She was very gracious about the whole thing, and later on sent me a basket of these little roll-up fruit things that she always brought to eat at the thing.
I must say, Frances was quite private. She was always very nice to me and so forth, but she didn't really mess around with her too much, and, you know, she had her space. But she loved these boys. I mean, I never saw her warm up to anybody like you guys. She just loved the Darwin boys. Yeah.
After the first show, she says, I have a great piece of advice for you. And I said, what is it? She says, get out of Hollywood and go get a job teaching music. This is not for you. She was looking out for our best interests. In many ways, she was right.
The fourth appearance by the Darling family was in an episode entitled Divorce Mountain Style. Now, this episode begins with just a very brief scene between Don and Andy. And I want to show it to you. It's really got nothing to do with the story, but it just, and I'll make a comment in a minute about it after we see it. This is the bicycle kit scene.
What'd you and Thomalu do after the movie last night?
Oh, we dropped by at Nelson's hardware store. He's got a new window display. Bicycle accessories.
Bicycle accessories?
Yeah, he's featuring a transparent plastic tool kit. You know, that you can hang on the bicycle seat. They're really practical, you know that? I mean, say you got a pair of pliers, a screwdriver, a wrench, and, say, a half a candy bar. Well, you know at a glance what you got.
Well, I don't know. I prefer the solid black ones. I mean, what I got in my bicycle kit's my business.
Now, isn't that wonderful? Mitch, any comments about that type of scene?
Yeah, one of the things that I missed so badly were the things when we would do those first shows. We'd always watch every move that Andy and Don made, and they usually did it on the bench in front of the courthouse, or sometimes like this way in the courthouse itself. But the little things that they said to each other they were meant to bring you to Mayberry, and we talked about that a lot. What an incredible thing it was when you're listening to all the stuff that's on TV now and then. You had to carry your mind back to a little town and a way of life that is no more. And Andy did it, and with Don, he did it with Goober, he did it with various characters. The whole idea was to pull you into Mayberry, and at the end of the movie, or at the end of the program, there would be what they called a button, which was they would leave you with a really nice feeling that you'd been a very nice place for the past 25 minutes. And they were so valuable that it just made me just insane when they cut them off, the front and back. I thought, how crassly commercial can you get that you'd cut out some of the most heartfelt touching.
You know, Neil? This show, as you can see, in every episode, there wasn't anything mean-spirited about this show at all. As opposed to what you have nowadays with all these shows that it's all this one-upsman and everybody's sort of, you know, really cynical and sardonic with each other. There was another episode that I thought the dialogue was so funny, and I haven't got it exactly right, but they're sitting on the park bench, and you don't see shows that play this way anymore. Everything's like, but they were sitting there, and it opened the scene, they were just sitting there. And pretty soon, Don says, "About time for lunch." And he says, "Yeah." Beep, beep. Don says, "Wonder what they're having today." Beep, beep. And he says, "Roast beef." Don goes, "You know, if we get there early, we can get the end pieces." But that's the kind of stuff that that show was, and you know, and it's something that we've lost, is that graceful way of humor that you didn't have to put somebody down to be funny.
And Mitch, in describing this scene, he told me, and I thought this was worded so beautifully, this type of little scene served as the keys to the time machine that Mayberry was. What a wonderful way to say it.
Oh, okay. I was watching and listening along with you and forgot it was over. Folks, I hope you are enjoying this. It's not over. We got one more week of this, one more show with episodes to wrap this thing up. I hope you're enjoying it. I've enjoyed putting it together. I enjoyed watching it before I put it together, and I'm watching it along with you and listening to it along with you. And it's just, man, this is just some amazing information that you're getting. And I am so thankful for Neil Brower and for Neil and Pat Coleman for providing us all this great content for here in the podcast. Folks, I want to thank you for coming along on the ride with us. I would encourage you, if you hadn't seen or heard the previous two episodes of this series of interviews, definitely go back and listen or watch those. And come back next week, because we got one more to wrap this thing up. We've already gotten a little bit of content or a little bit of comments back, and I would love to hear from you. You can call me at 888-684-8415 and leave a message. Folks, I also wanted to tell you, I wanted to thank again Neil Brower for being executive producer. And if you would like to help with the show and with the expenses of the show, you can head over to twochairsnowaiting.com. And when you get there, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can become a patron. If you do that, you can choose to give like $1 an episode, or 50 cents an episode, or $2 an episode. And then every time I put out an actual episode of the podcast, you know, they would take $1 from you or whatever you donated. And I would get that at the end of the month. So that's one way you can help support. The other way is to right below that is a donate button. And that's what most people do. They just do a one-time donation and donate, $20, $25, whatever they donate. And it all goes toward keeping this show on the air or on the internet. I'm not sure which is the right way. But there are expenses that go along with doing all this. And I do appreciate all the help I get. And all the executive producers have donated, and I thank them in one way or the other. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's by giving me content or something that helps it out. So anyway, I want to encourage you, if you want to be a part of the show, you can do that. And if you're an executive producer, your name will show up on a list on the Two Chairs No Waiting website. There's a list there that shows all the executive producers of past episodes. So if you want to be one, you can definitely donate. No need to do that, though. I'm not trying to pressure you in. But I figure if you're listening to this point, you actually enjoy the show. All right, folks. Again, I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 and let me know what you think about these podcast episodes with the Dillards. You can also email me at floyd@imayberry.com, or you can just drop by over at the website at twochairsnowaiting.com and leave a comment right there. All the information about how to contact me is also located there on the podcast website. So if you can't remember, just head over there and click the contact button at the top. All right, folks. I want to thank you again for coming to Mayberry and visiting with me. And we'll see you next week right here on Two Chairs No Waiting. Good night, everybody.
The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen ed provided by Strayer University affiliates Sophia Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.